Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast.
For product managers and innovators.
Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level. For the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host. I have a great guest for us to learn from. The author of a new book, The Agenda Mover, When Your Good Idea Is Not Enough. Doesn't that just sum up the challenge of being a product manager when our good ideas are not enough? I encourage you to get the summary of our discussion, find the links discussed, and view the transcript by going to the show notes for this episode. And that's at theeverydayinnovator.com/098. This is also where you'll find my product mastery roadmap. Get it to see how you can increase your influence and success as a product manager. My guest argues that in order to implement any innovation, no matter how great your idea, and we all have great ideas, that you must be what he calls an agenda mover. He's analyzed how leaders such as Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and Martin Luther King Jr. were able to turn their ideas into action. He has also spent years teaching the skills that enable people to move agendas, and he helps leaders of Fortune 500 companies apply those skills. He is also an organizational behavior professor at Cornell University and the co-founder of the Bacharach Leadership Group, and his name is Samuel B. Bacharach. Enjoy the interview. Professor Bacharach, thanks so much for joining the Everyday Innovators and discussing your latest book.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're here. So your latest book is The Agenda Mover, When Your Good Idea Is Not Enough. I love that subtitle. And you shared with this material, if you cannot move your agenda, you are not a leader. Tell us what you were meaning by that.
Well, I think we tend to over-dramatize what we mean by leaders and what it takes to innovate. But first of all, we begin the assumption that all leaders are individuals that try to get some action going, to move something, be proactive in some capacity. Then clearly, the litmus test of leadership is what do you get done? You know, we live in a culture where we tend to see leadership as a heroic quality. The charismatic person will come over the hill and save you. The long ranger. That's total nonsense. I mean, it's total nonsense. Not only that, it's nonsense that we sell people also. So you've got to be transformational, existential, charismatic. No, what you need to do is execute. How many leaders do you remember for some ideas they had out there or for their charisma? No, what you remember for them is actually their capacity to move the ideas. You know, move ideas. You know, Thomas Edison, my favorite quote, once said, a good idea without execution is hallucination. Well, that's my notion. Can you move the idea? Can you execute? And there is no leadership without it.
I think the traditional approach of many of us, even not into the literature, take when we think of leaders is that person that kind of stands in front of everyone and has something special that they're able to influence others. And we focus on that something special aspect, right? Like you said, their charisma or something that makes them stand out. And instead, even though there are leaders like that, certainly, we need people that can move ideas forward.
You know, your concern with ideas and what you do here is you interview people who do innovation. Let me ask you a question. When do you ever see an innovation move on the basis of personality and purely charisma? I mean, I'm asking you, and why, and therefore, if innovation and change and being proactive is the whole backbone of leadership in our culture, then we have to look at what really does that. And, you know, too often we have this notion of it's that charismatic character. You know, if it's that charismatic character, I'm asking your listeners, how many of you would really be included? How many of you would us be excluded by that because we don't look right, we don't sound right, whatever, we have great ideas? So my whole point is we have a democratized leadership, especially in this world when we're talking about startups and people leading throughout the organizations, all organizations. We've got to make sure that a lot of people understand that they can lead. We've got to take this mythology of the leader out of people's head and tell people it's about very specific skills that you can lead in spite of who you are, not because of who you are.
Right.
And that's very important to me.
It is. Indeed, one of the reasons why I was anxious to talk with you was there was a study done for product managers and innovators earlier this year that identified four skills that lead to more effective product managers and executives in that space. And there's skills that have to do with how do you indeed get your idea out and get others following it, right? And I think there are forceful personalities in this space. You know, Steve Jobs would come to mind, but he married both very good ideas, some unique insights into where customers were going, with the forcefulness of moving people, moving people in a direction too.
You know, I mean, he's actually a good example. I'm not one that believes in the deification of Steve Jobs. I'm sure most of us don't. But if we take a little distance and we ask a completely different question, and go through the period where he didn't make it in Apple, where he was right. asked to sort of gently move out. The interesting thing about Jobs, you know, he had all these insights, but how did he mobilize people? How did he get back in? How was he capable of mobilizing? Now, I'm not saying that this was Mr. Nice Guy or whatever, but you have to ask yourself a question. How did he survive? How did he move the ideas? How did he push the ideas in the organization? So in that sense, I think it's important. And, you know, we can debate the personality, and I'm not a psychoanalyst. I don't want to get there. The point really is that people really – ideas, as far as I'm concerned, are not the challenge. You know, we make a big deal out of ideation and creativity, and I celebrate that. I celebrate that. You know, I think that, you know, if you take a look at innovation and ideation, they're both very popular in the current business climate. But those alone are simply insufficient without pairing them with some ability to get something through the darn maze of the organization. So If you don't have those micro-political skills to move the ideas, well, you know, you're in there with Edison's hallucinating group. And so that's my whole point. And it's not always the genius with the one brilliant idea it's that wins the game. I'm not – and I think it's very important to focus on these micro-skills, whether you're doing you're an entrepreneur trying to get money from a VC group, whether you're working in a large organization trying to getting support for a new idea, whether you're in the public sector – those are the skills that are important, the micro skills to move the ideas in the organization, the political micro skills.
Yeah, it's very challenging as that lone genius, even if you are in that great position to be that, to get any work actually done, right? You just don't have the critical mass needed. You mentioned Edison before. You know, he had a team of engineers working on any of his projects, you know, trying over and over what might make a light bulb actually light and glow. So it's not the lone operation. You do need to be able to enable people to move with you in the direction you want to go.
And that becomes the issue. The issue is, okay, so essentially at any point in time, especially today, you think about where the innovator really has. I mean, I'm thinking of one case of a young innovator I spoke to the other day, and I won't go into too much detail, but here he's got this brilliant idea, and he's got some resources, but what he needs to do now is mobilize people around the ideas. Now, some of them he's going to have to mobilize with money, without money. He's got to mobilize a group. Essentially, he's got to mobilize not simply a team, but a coalition committed to what he wants to get done. Now, that's the lone entrepreneur. His challenge isn't creativity. We make such a big deal out of creativity. Well, you know, I've been teaching in Cornell for a long time, and I always tell people, you know, give me 4 or 5 Cornell undergraduates, I'll come up with more ideas than you know what to do with.
Right.
The question is, will I be able to move that idea, mobilize the support we need for the ideas? Corporations don't have a creativity problem. They have an execution problem, and that is moving ideas through the maze. And I think it's some very specific skills that I've looked at and that I'm concerned about training people with.
And I think what you just said is a really important point. And I suspect some of our everyday innovators listening would disagree. And I want to go back and emphasize the point that you said organizations don't have a problem creating ideas. They have a problem actually moving them and taking action on them. And a lot of organizations don't see it that way, because I've been in the senior leadership teams of trying to help them with innovation. Right. And they see the problem indeed as not having enough ideas. But when do the analysis, it's actually, they don't have a good process for selecting valuable ideas and taking action on them.
Actually, it's a very good point, and I have evidence that effect. Look, you look at, and I will, again, I've been in a number of major corporations, and one couple of major corporations. I've actually, my group in New York actually helped them spin out some whole leadership innovation academies in which we teach people how to move ideas. Yeah, and we looked at a couple of corporations, and one comes to mind, where there are thousands of ideas. Mm-hmm. And this whole idea that somehow in your corporate world there's this meritocracy, that the great ideas come to the surface and they're the ones that are celebrated. Well, if you know, if you believe that, then I'll tell you that polo is America's national sport. Meritocracy is not the only thing that drives ideas that come to the surface. A lot of it has to do with your political savvy. So let me give you an example. You're sitting in an organization that's been bought out by a large corporation, and you've just been bought out. You've been bought out because some products that you have, but you also have some new ideas. How do you get them to listen to you? How do you get the allies? How do you overcome the resistance? Even if there is a chain for evaluating the ideas, how do you get enough clout and enough support and enough traction to move that idea in that large organizational maze? And I think your listeners understand instinctively what I talk about. It is this idea, I'll put the idea in the suggestion box, run it up the poll, and have some people evaluate, and they'll tell you if it's a good idea or not. No, no, no. If you don't campaign for your idea, if you don't mobilize for your ideas, just as an entrepreneur, an external entrepreneur, an internal entrepreneur has to do the same thing. If you can't campaign, I hate the analogy these days, and don't traumatize your listeners. You can't campaign, you don't get elected, and your ideas don't get selected. Mm-hmm. And I think that's absolutely essential. So I don't quite swallow this, all you need is an idea and the meritocracy will take care of it. I don't swallow it.
Right. I was going to say, there's always that resistance to something new, right, to change. And I wanted to ask you about that. You know, when we're looking at change, change always brings fear. And right. We have to somehow counter that, right? So how do product managers and leaders in the space address that fear of change, of doing something new?
Well, I think you're asking the $64,000 question. And over the last number of years, I and my group in New York, this Bacharach leadership group, we basically have gone from company to company training people exactly that. If you begin with your assumption, which is a premier assumption, that people will resist change, first of all, that assumption by itself gets to be really, really more complex. And if I may, if you'll indulge me for a moment, I'll elaborate on that.
Please.
You see, opposing innovation and opposing change is like, you know, it's like opposing apple pie, even when there's not a lot of sugar in it. I mean, like opposing apple pie. No one ever comes and tells you, this is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Forget it. And no one tells you in the corporate world, we're against change. Forget it. It's a lot subtler than that. It's a lot subtler than that. People resist not because they play got you, but they play sort of, yes, but did you think about this? So there's room to play. There's room to play because change and innovation are the things these days we, at least on a token level, celebrate. So there's room to play right now. It's not 1965 in the automobile industry. But given that there's room to play, it demands from you as someone trying to move change and innovation that, number one, you begin to really get thoughtful and seriously anticipate the possible resistance. That means you need to methodically understand arguments of resistance. And I always argue with people in training them that there are not many arguments that people can make against you. And two, that you really begin to develop the skills to mobilize, to be able to justify your agenda. And again, there's skills to that. And then that you begin to really work on getting the buy-in. How do you negotiate the buy-in? And finally, fourth, that you don't drop the ball, that you do things to sustain momentum. So when I talk about skills, political skills to overcome resistance, and sometimes appropriate resistance, I'm talking about your capacity to anticipate, mobilize, negotiate, and sustain momentum. And these are things you can actually learn. We've trained people all around the world in these skills, and some of them were the least charismatic people you can think of. And so I think that is the challenge, to give people the skills to overcome the type of resistance they often face.
And in saying that, you don't have to be charismatic to get this done, I think is also really valuable and important. As product managers, you know, a lot of us come from an engineering development background. Another big part comes from the marketing, maybe sales background. Mm-hmm. But we see ourselves often as the person who just is trying to deeply understand a customer's problem, gain some insights, and provide them value. Right. And frankly, a lot of us, we're just wired. I don't want to speak for all product managers, but I know I'm personally wired. I don't like getting wrapped up in the politics. I like being able to try to offer value. And if there's a set of straightforward skills I can develop to get that done, that's pretty valuable to me.
And I think, you know, and I say this with humor and respect, and I think that what you guys do is absolutely essential in your show, so give you guys a lot more credit. Let me just tell you what I'm talking about. A few weeks ago, I had the privilege of being out in California talking to, in one company, suffice it to say, it was a Fortune 15 company, to 70 product engineers. I mean, we're talking of, you know, really, really intimidating, bright bunch. I'm going in there, and I'm going to talk about my whole notion of political competence. And the first reaction I get is paranoia. I mean, then you got these guys from MIT, brilliant engineers who've created brilliant products. And somehow I had that essential fear that I always do when you face a room like that. And after a few minutes, it became so obvious that these are, and it's always been the case in the last 5 years, these are the people that are most receptive to these ideas. Why? Because they understand exactly what you just said. They've got these great ideas, they understood the customer, and now they've got to drive it through the organization.
Right.
And more I see these people are the ones that I had at BLG, we had a retreat with some engineers a while ago, and these are the ones that are most hungry. You know, it's sort of, they know all the details of what they do, and now all they've got to do is learn those few tricks that will, and I mean in the positive way, that will allow them to move that in the organization. I mean, how often you as an engineer saying, hey, I've got this, but I can't get anyone to support it. So I found engineers to be by far the most receptive to what the ideas we're talking about. Ironic, but true.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're frustrated. They're the most frustrated, you know, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, and that's the point. And recently I was asked, what are the stumbling points for new product managers? And one of them indeed is, you know, your great idea, your great insight that you gained from good customer research, you're not going to be able to get anyone to pay attention because you don't have the influence to get to do that yet, right? Right. And how do you overcome this resistance?
Well, that's why the whole book is called The Agenda Mover, and because in you overcome the resistance by, for example, before you talked about fears, okay? Now, you know, you have to deal. I believe you overcome the resistance by giving people mundane, specific skills that are by the numbers. I in that sense, I have something in common with engineers, and that is I believe in a checklist. I believe in a checklist. For example, before you talked about this whole notion of dealing with people's fears. How do you deal with their fears? How do you identify their fears? What do you actually do with the fears? So, and that actually becomes a good example. I mean, you know, if you look at it, and from my end, when you're dealing with people's fears, let me give you a couple of examples. Here's one notion. You know right away that there's the fear of failure. So you ask a bunch of people. You're a really smart engineer, and you have this great idea, but now you've got to sort of convince the CFO in a company to join your effort. Now the CFO in a company has an MBA from some Ivy League school, and he's not an engineer, but he's a good CFO. So you know he's afraid. Now, that means you have to methodically illustrate the potential success. You know that he may be a bit concerned about the turf paranoia, that it's giving you too much turf. Then you got to really focus on the payoff. You know that he's going to worry about accountability, worry about ambiguity. So be very concrete. You know, so he's uncomfortable with the risk that may put him in because he's trying to back up something that he doesn't quite understand. So minimize the risk and then always couch it in their reality. Now, this sounds very mundane, but when you sit with a group of product managers or innovators and you give them this list and you say to them, now go through this like a checklist. Have you done this? Yeah. By the way, it's the same checklist you use trying to get, as an entrepreneur pitching to a VC firm. If you ask them methodically, here's the 7 things you need to know. Or for example, here are the things you need to know in anticipating the gotcha game or the yes but things. I believe that we have to train leaders specifically in these micro specific skills, justifying. What are the specific language of justification. So as mundane as it sounds, that's my notion of helping people lead for their innovation and ideas. That mundane checklist.
And as you were saying that, you're putting it in the context of the person you're talking to and trying to align what I took it as trying to align your agenda with their agenda, which means you have to understand their agenda also.
Yeah, one great chief technology officer of another company recently had a conversation. We're having a conversation, and we came up with a really kind of a very simple note. What are you really trying to do in any setting? You're trying to get, you've got a lot of things you're pursuing. I've got a lot of things pursuing. I need to shift my agenda like a hole in the head, but you want me to. What we're really trying to do, I'm trying to get you to shift your priorities to align them, at least in some capacity, with my priorities. Mm-hmm. Or I'm trying to get you to shift your resources to support what I'm trying to do. Now, this could be a very methodical, incremental process. And the interesting thing is that it's not simply going to come because I charmed you to death. It's going to come because I was methodically, deeply understood where you're coming from. For example, I may begin to understand that you have a very conservative, traditional agenda, or you may be a developer. In the book, in the agenda movie, we categorize the type of resistance. And when we go with background leadership, when we go into the field, we teach people to categorize the resistance so you can align your priorities with others. All of it has to do with categorizing, getting beyond words like resistance and agenda and breaking up to the specific things you really need to do. And I think that's all teachable.
And let me ask you about those categories of resistance. When you gave the example of the CFO, you know, this is someone right. who's driven by specifics that they need concrete evidence, information, but not everyone would be looking for that kind of information.
Absolutely.
What categories of resistance do you talk
about? Well, let's just play. We have multiple, but it gets a little more complex. But let's just play with three just for the fun of it. They'll sound funny to your readers, but to your listeners. But think about it. We did a training last week in one company in a group in Pennsylvania, and we put them through a very simple exercise. I asked them in the organization, the first round, categorize them. And you know how we did it? And it's in the book, too. Look, you got on one hand, you've got, for lack of a better term, the top dogs, those people that make the final decisions. Then you got your gatekeepers, right, the CFOs. And then you got those gurus, you know, the people in the organization that have no clout but actually can legitimize your idea. Mm-hmm. And then you get other players, just for the fun of it, bear with me. So I asked the group, and one of my trainers asked the group, and she's an interesting woman. She asked the group, who would you go to first if you were moving an idea? And you know how many of them said, well, we'd go to the top dog first, which is the worst thing you can move because the top dog is only capable of saying yes or no, right?
Right.
And in all likelihood, they'll say no. So then they went through an exercise, would you go to your gatekeeper, the CFO person, or would you go to the guru that has no clout whatsoever but can legitimize your idea? Now, as mundane as some of this sounds, knowing who to launch your idea to in the organization or in any other setting is absolutely critical. And what we need to know is how to categorize the actors, the power players, and also how to categorize their agendas. Are they traditionalists, revolutionaries, developers, adjusters? We train people, and that's exactly what we're concerned about. I believe in the mindful focus on these issues. You know, we talk a lot about it. You know, on the surface, a lot of what I'm saying is not new to your listeners. But what is new is I really think that for each one of these areas, there are specific things you can do and learn to do in order to move that agenda, more to move that innovation. Mm-hmm. It's got to be that concrete.
And these are the mechanics of the campaign planning. If you have to campaign for your ideas, what's your plan to get that done? Where do you start? Who do you talk to?
That's exactly, and it's a micro campaign. You know, I mean, you know, lately, and we'll all recover from this next week. Hopefully, we're hearing all this campaign language. You know,
right.
but there's one phrase I really think that is true. You can't innovate, and you get nothing put in place unless you have a ground game. Okay. And you need a ground game. And what I'm simply saying is that, and I go back to Edison. You know, when I don't pretend but to spend most of my first part of my career, at least, which is a long career, being a professor of organizational behavior at Cornell. But what happened is about 8 years ago, when I began to really delve deeply and partner with organizations more by and write these books, more by accident than by anything, it became clear to me that ideas, people have to be taught how to establish a political ground game for their ideas. And it came clear to me in a very simple way. A major corporation asked me in those days before the Bacharach Leadership was formed to go out and train the high potentials. Mm-hmm. And only when we began to focus on specific skills the high potentials needed to move ideas did we get any place. My whole point about all this stuff, it is skills, learn skills, learn skills, learn skills. You know, I'll tell you a quick story. It's actually true. I mean, all this stuff, but this one comes to mind. When I was a younger professor at Cornell years ago, I was living in Ithaca, and I was working in my garage one day, and I'll never forget this. I don't know how much your listeners remember this, but BitNet was the beginning of the internet, sort of, if my recollection. I remember in those days, they were using it for university libraries, and I said to myself, wow, I could sell books like this. I really had this idea. This would be right. A great idea of selling it. Now, let me tell you something. I don't think any of your readers are out there buying books from me, but they are doing it on Amazon. I scribble the idea on a piece of paper, and that's it, making me, on paper, I was a successful academic, but in terms of an entrepreneur, nothing. Great idea. I did nothing to move it. No regrets. But that's my whole point, that it's about getting up and putting a campaign in order. And all these conferences and all these meetings that tell you ideation, come up with a great idea. If you don't have the political, look at some of these leaders. Come on, folks. They have political skills. It is not simply the great idea people out there that are dominating the terrain. It's the people that knew how to mobilize it. And, you know, what's the story about Jobs and all these people? They also know how to mobilize other people.
Right.
And so let's get real. It's not just the meritocracy of ideation. It is also the practical, pragmatic politics of moving your agenda.
And that does suggest there is another way to get some of this done, which is if you're not the person who can figure out how to move these ideas forward, or maybe you don't have that interest in actually learning, you know, the steps to do that planning and execute the plan for it. If you can find someone who does have the political savviness to influence others and you can marry up with them, you can actually get a lot of your agenda accomplished.
And that's exactly why, and I hate to be a plugger, we are both the agenda mover and why we formed the Bacharach Leadership Group. That is exactly what we train and partner the people to do, exactly on those skills. I am not the person that's going to come and tell a bunch of really, you know, really brilliant and smart people what ideas are sellable. You know, let me just show you how this really interfaces on a level that your listeners will really resonate. We talk a lot, and I know from your background, you'll understand this right away. We talk a lot about the whole idea of justifying. Well, but we also talk a lot about prototype. Mm-hmm. And at what point do you decide that a prototype is actually ready and is set? You know, so we talk a lot about prototyping and. And what is actually, what do we want from a prototype? What we want from a prototype are certain components that will justify support for that prototype. That's why it's called a prototype, not a product, okay? Uh-huh. And my whole notion is prototyping is a political act because in any organization, which prototype are they going to support? And if that's the case, when you evaluate the prototype, what are you trying to do? You're trying to justify it. Not to yourself, but the people who are going to sponsor it, whether that's a VC firm, whether it's the people in your organization, it doesn't matter in a big organization. So you're going to be asking yourself some very, very specific questions about the prototype, criteria of justification. Now, someone says to somebody, oh, that's an engineering thing. No, but when you say simple, does it work? Does it stick? Does it scale up? Those are also political questions. Answer those questions and you'll be able to pitch it better in your organization. So there's an interface between the engineering and the politics around the whole notion of criteria for evaluating prototyping.
Absolutely. And that's that collaboration. Again, you can't do this by yourself. You need to build that coalition to do it with.
And that is the ultimate, as you and I know, that's one of the great understatements of all time. That's absolutely the case. And, you know, and it's also very difficult because we're living in this culture. You know, I see this more and more. I see this more and more in this culture. You know, you go out there and you have this whole idea of the entrepreneur. Here's this: we don't talk about the entrepreneurial coalition, the entrepreneurial team. We see this whole business of taking a look at doing it on your own. We celebrate the individual. It's important, but no one ever got any place on. You know, somebody asked me the other day, just for the heck of it, well, what about the frontier mentality of the individual pioneer? Yeah, well, good news to you. No individual pioneer ever made it from St. Louis to San Francisco in 1840-something. They went in a group. Group, and I believe that totally. Leadership, moving innovation, is about your capacity to mobilize and have the skills to mobilize with other people. And that is the niche in which we concentrate. That's what we train people in. And that's my passion.
And I think your book, The Agenda Mover, is a good resource for us to have some practical steps, some actions that we can take to help get that done.
And I hope that's, you know, and I welcome that. And I welcome your readers to look us up and join one of our conferences, one of our meetings, or our discussions. I look forward to hearing from them. I just think I don't pretend on any level that we're going to spark creativity. I think, you know, there are people out there. Nothing frustrates me more than people that sit there in an organization or any setting, and you see that all the time, who have wonderful ideas, and they said, I thought of that. Why didn't I move it?
Right.
And the reason you didn't move it is because you swallow the idea that the whole notion that the good idea was enough. It isn't. You have to really start that innovation campaign. And Backrack Leadership Group and in the book, that's what we try to really do. So I hope that the listeners would, you know, look us up on a website, you know, write an email. It's a great arena to have an exchange about this. You know, as I said, I don't believe it's creativity.
And share with us how we can do that. How can listeners find out more about the Backrack Leadership Group and also where to find your book?
Yeah, you can also go to blg-lead.com. That's blg-lead.com. And you can find out about our group. And the book is the Agenda Mover, When Your Good Idea Is Not Enough, is available in Amazon and generally bookstore, but Amazon has it. And I always welcome to hear from people. It's an amazing discussion. And there's a series of free books that are being put out in collaboration with Cornell Press. And BLG is Backrack Leadership. We're located in Manhattan. And always welcome discussions and invite people to our meetings and conferences. You know, especially the people you're speaking to. You know, a lot of time you speak to people, you know, different audiences and so on when you're plugging your book. But, you know, when you talk to product people, when you talk to engineers, these are the folks that get it. These are the people that get it, the innovators, the ones that say, Don, how do I move the damn thing? I remember a few weeks ago I was speaking to one young woman who's a top-level engineer. The entire frustration that her and her group couldn't be move the idea in the organization, and we did a session with them. It was political. They hardly articulated the message. They understood the opposition. They didn't anticipate. You know, these skills that maybe some people take for granted. I also want to talk about that. You know, you hear about these skills as you're listening to them, and people said, yeah, I know that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know that, how come you haven't done it? You haven't done it because you kept it on a general level. What I'm asking people to do is methodically understand what these components are. We need a type of mindfulness, you know. So that's what we're concerned about. And, you know, I welcome a dialogue around it because I think this is the hidden skill in terms of moving. Political competence is everything.
Absolutely.
If you're creative.
Yeah. And
I hope this is you. If you're creative.
It is a core capability that product managers need. Because at some point in our careers, we pretty quickly realize just having the idea and the insights isn't enough. Indeed, we have to get others to buy into this with us. And as listeners know, I love innovation quotes, and we try to end with an innovation quote. You shared one from Edison before, but I want to just ask you if you have an innovation quote that you love and if you could share that with us.
That's the one I sort of lived on, but there is an innovation book that I can recommend. How's that?
Sure.
Not by me. You know, one of the books that I often tell people to look at is a book that actually I found out only lately that Steve Jobs was a fan of. It's actually a philosophy of science book. It's called The Structure of the Scientific Revolution by James Cooden. It's a book about how science moves, and it shows that more often than not, science moves incrementally on the basis of people moving ideas. It's a book where the phrase paradigm comes from. So it's a book that it's a heavy academic book, but you know, once in a while you suggest something to someone. I write for Inc. magazine. I wrote a piece on it. It's a book called Structural Scientific Revolutions, not called Fun Read, but a book everybody should take a look. That's of course after you read The Agenda Movement by me, although be it the case. Anyway, I hope this was of some use to your listeners. I certainly enjoyed it, and it's again sometimes. If one person grabs onto this and has an impact on them, that'll be great. And, you know, if one organization becomes a little more innovative on the basis of this, it's always wonderful. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Professor Brockrock, I appreciate it too. These are insights that we badly need as product managers and innovators. And I encourage people to check out your book, The Agenda Mover. And thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening. So many people are finding value in this podcast, but we still have a lot of product managers to help. And by we, I mean you and I. Please let others know about this free resource by sharing it on social media. It's easy. Just go to the show notes at theeverydayinnovator.com/098, and you'll see buttons at the top of the post for sharing it. Just click on one, makes it easy. Also on the same page, check out my product mastery roadmap that shows you how to go from being a product manager to being a product master. Again, that page is theeverydayinnovator.com/098. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.